hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the world's greatest sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan. And today I am in a very pleasant Kununurra in the East Kimberley of Western Australia, right up north.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan. And for once, I am finally back at home, sitting in my lovely house in Stavanger after a road trip around Norway. So we've both been traveling, Di. Look at you in Kununurra.
Yeah, I'm in Kununurra for 10 days, 12 to a while. Yeah, 10 to 12 days. And I know you've been away for ages as well. So yeah, it must be so nice to be home.
Oh my gosh, so good to be home and back into a regular routine. And you're in the Kimberley for the Ord Valley Muster, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's an event that I work on with my PR hat on. So the Ord Valley Muster is a 10-day festival that's got everything from a rodeo to an Indigenous corroboree to massive music festivals and concerts. A black tie dinner under the stars. I've worked on this for several years now, and it's one of my favourite events, favourite time of year. It's really nice.
One day I'll get there.
Yeah.
Despite you being busy at work, you have still managed to sit down and watch the Formula One because priorities, right?
I'm committed to this podcast and I'm committed to Formula One. So yes, rain, hail, shine or Kununurra. Yeah, I mean, one of the most remote parts of the world still watching the Grand Prix. Imola Grand Prix, of course, held in the Emilia-Romagna region of Italy. The Emilia-Romagna region in Italy is known as the Green Heart of Italy. It's known for amazing food and produce, and we'll talk more about that later.
Let's talk about the Grand Prix. So if we start with qualifying, that was an interesting qualifying, wasn't it?
Oh, we haven't had an action-packed quali like this for a while, I feel like. First of all, thank God Yuki Tsunoda survived, walked away from that crash. The car flipped. Like it was such a big impact. In Q1.
It was like a Zhou Guan Yu crash. Remember when he did that and George Russell jumped out of his car in the middle of the, it was actually in the race, jumped out of his car to go and check that he was okay, yep. Which obviously then ended George Russell's race. But it was along the lines of that, the flipping into the barriers and when they actually showed the car sitting there after the yellow flag had gone up, it looked pretty damaged, but you didn't quite know what had happened until the replay. And then I was like, oh my God.
I know. It was like exactly right. First saw the crash on the broadcast. Well, we saw the crashed car and thought, oh wow, what happened? Did he hit the barrier? Did he run into the wall? And then they showed the replay and the car was airborne and flipped. And thank God for the halo doing its job and keeping drivers safe. Like 20 years ago, I'm not sure a driver would have walked away from that and been able to race the next day and do 63 laps of a circuit the next day.
Right. It was a big hit.
Massive. Yeah. So Yuki ended up starting the race from pit lane as a result of that crash. And then the other crash in Q1, Monique, was everyone's favourite Argentinian, Franco Colapinto, who replaced our driver, Jack Doohan. And what I find just so ironic is that team boss from Alpine, Flavio Briatore, literally said, you've got three jobs. Go fast. Don't crash. What was the other one?
Yeah. Get points.
Score points.
Yeah.
Go fast. Don't crash. Score points. And then he's in the car in his first time behind the wheel of the Alpine. Where it matters, and he crashes.
I know.
Like, if I was Jack Doohan, I'd be sitting there just rubbing my fingers about that.
Well, did you see, and I don't know if this was real or not, but I, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that flies around on the internet these days, but there was a screenshot of Mick Doohan's Instagram stories that had like a laughy face or something above the screenshot of Colapinto crashing, and I don't know if it was real or not, but if it was, like, all the shade.
I saw that too, but then apparently it got deleted, and I think it was a comment that he'd written on the post that I saw. But You know, exactly. It could just be made up internet stuff, but yeah. My first thought was Jack when that happened.
Me too.
Last week, you and we were doing like the quarter season recap, you talked about how vocal Colapinto's fans are and how they're sort of throwing hate around the internet and bullying and whatnot. And I've seen Colapinto come out, seen a post where he's quoted saying, everyone please be respectful. And I thought that was really good for Colapinto. I mean, it's bad he has to say that, but it's good
absolutely.
That he has said it, you know, like to try and rein in those very, very passionate Argentinian fans.
Yeah. And it's good for him to take a little bit of responsibility in that and say, hey, come on, guys, this isn't on. Like, it's one thing to be passionate and excited that he's taken that seat and that's wonderful. Yes, great. I would be excited if it was another Australian taking that seat. If it was the other way around, if Doohan took Colapinto's seat. But the aggressiveness and the, you know, the hate that gets thrown the other way is not okay. So it'd be interesting. Okay. I haven't looked at anything any of the comments on any of his posts or anything about that crash from the fans. So I wonder what's happened there, if they've decided to stay quiet or despite that crash die, he still managed to qualify P15. So he made it into Q2. I thought that was pretty incredible that he managed to crash.
But that was only
because
Ollie Bearman's lap time wasn't counted.
Yes. So he dropped out down to like 17th or 18th or something.
Yeah, it got deleted because he posted a time, but he didn't cross the start finish line before the red light came on for the safety car after the crash. So
yes.
That's why it was deleted.
It's really sad because he did really, really well on that lap. He was flying.
And the FIA are saying, pull it out of the bag a bit earlier. And it was at the end of Q1 anyway, like towards the end. And his team, Haas, was very unhappy about that decision. And they went to the FIA to ask for a written explanation and appealed the decision, which was upheld. But also in quali.
Carlos Sainz.
I know. Carlos Sainz finishing fastest in Q2. I mean, who saw that coming? The Williams.
I am so proud of those Williams boys. I really am.
Yeah. And then Alonso qualified in fifth.
Yeah. So hang on. If we just run through the qualification, the grid order. So Piastri came in pole and then Verstappen in second. So Piastri came in pole, even though at that last corner, he had three cars worth of traffic. So he managed to kind of keep his cool through all that traffic and still put the car right at the top. So we have Piastri, Verstappen, Russell in third, Norris in fourth, Alonso in fifth, Carlos Sainz in sixth in the Williams, Albon in seventh in the Williams, Stroll in eighth in the green tractor, Hadjar in ninth, Gasly in 10th, the poor Ferrari boys, 11th and 12th, Leclerc and Hamilton.
I know, at a home race as well, that's tough for any Tifosi to take.
Yeah. And then we went 13th, Antonelli, Bortoletto 14th, Colapinto 15th, Lawson 16th, Hülkenberg 17th, Ocon 18th, Behrmann 19th, and of course, Yuki Tsunoda with his massive crash was 20th. So it was a really interesting mix-up on the starting grid for the Formula One race. Ferrari sitting in 11th and 12th. We've got Hadjar, a rookie, up there in 9th.
Gasly made it into the top 10 in the Alpine. The two Aston Martins in the top 10 after they brought upgrades to their car. That didn't convert to race results, unfortunately, for them. But for quali, I mean, that's at least there's a little bit of hope there for all the Aston Martin fans and for the team.
Right. What was interesting was that normally in quali, we see everyone kind of on the same, they're setting their times on the same tyres. So in Q2, the Aston Martins strapped on their medium. And that was how they were setting their times on the mediums. And I think actually Russell even bolted on a pair of mediums in the end there, whereas everyone else was setting their times on the softs. So it was kind of interesting to see how well the mediums were firing up.
Performing.
And, you know,
So Pirelli bought a new tyre compound to this race, which was different to the other compounds, a bit trickier. A few more things for the teams to navigate with how the tyres would perform. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. It mixed things up. So from a fan point of view, it was just awesome. It was a great qualifying.
Interestingly enough, Emilia Romagna, so the Imola Grand Prix, tends to be not the most interesting Grand Prix, shall we say. Not boring. Let's not say boring. It tends to be not the most interesting because overtaking is hard. It's a narrow track.
Quite a load of BS. Honest to God, how many overtakes did we see in that race? I was so sick of the commentary team talking about, oh, you know, quali so important and, you know, because track position and it's really hard to overtake and yada, yada, yada. And then the race itself, there were just overtakes everywhere. And I was like, oh, well, obviously maybe the cars went on a diet and got skinnier. Don't think so. Well, maybe, you know, the drivers are more skilled than the commentary team gives them credit for.
It's number two because that first overtake, if we talk about skill. Max Verstappen on Oscar Piastri in turn, well, it was in the chicane, which is the first turns. Holy heck, that was impressive.
That turn, that overtake by Max Verstappen was absolutely insane.
Gold class.
Exactly why he is a four-time world champion. Absolutely gutted for Oscar Piastri having to play catch-up to Max Verstappen after Max getting the lead from the get-go. But I was absolutely floored. It was a class move.
Absolutely. And talk about gutted, the message that I sent you immediately, I cannot repeat what I said because we have a policy on the podcast, no sparing, but I sent you a very short, very succinct message after that overtake because obviously very disappointed that he got the jump on Piastri. But
yeah,
exactly like you, both Espen and I were watching him. We were like, oh my God, that is, you've got to give it to him. That was just, he came up and he was so sure of himself and just did not let up. You watch Oscar use that move a couple of races down the track. I bet you he will, because I knew at the start of this race as well, with Oscar being in pole, I said to Espen, you watch him. He's going to do a Max Verstappen and he's going to take off and come straight across Verstappen, like Verstappen always does. And what did he do?
Yep.
Exactly that. So you watch. He would have seen that move and gone, righto. I see. Yeah. I see what you're bringing. I'm gonna bring that back.
Exactly. But it was a great race. There was so many incidents. We had DNFs from engine failure, which we haven't seen in Formula One for some races. Poor Kimi Antonelli, the homeboy who invited his whole class to come to the race since he was born in Bologna, 40 kilometers away from the race circuit. So he invited his whole class, which I thought was such a beautiful gesture, since he's still technically at school. And then he had, I was on lap 46, an engine failure. And
So he wasn't the first one, though. It was Ocon in lap 29. And unfortunately, so this is what I love and hate about motor racing. You know, in a race like the one we had this weekend, it is up to pure chance and pure luck and your strategy calls, though they might have been the right strategy call for a race with no safety cars, no interventions.
The teams do allow for safety cars and they have their plans for if the safety car's deployed, you know, let's hold off until this point to change tyres because we might get a safety car. So they do take it.
There's a little bit of leeway.
Planning. Yeah. But for Oscar, who started on the medium tyres, which seemed to drop off really quickly. So they pitted him early and changed him to hards, whereas a lot of others on the medium tyres stayed out. And then the medium tyres seemed to fire up again. It was like they got a second wind. So Oscar had made that pit stop, lost track position, was disadvantaged with the safety car.
It advantaged Verstappen because he took a hugely pit stop during the safety car. So did Norris. So, you know, I guess, like you said, if you pitted early, it really disadvantaged you. But if you had managed to stay out on your hards or your mediums, then you were good. And then obviously Kimi Antonelli in lap 46 brought out the full safety car, which again, people pitted. Piastri did not pit yet again. So he was left fighting on old hards. So it was Verstappen, Piastri, and then Norris had new tyres and Norris on the radio.
I'm not saying let me pass him, but I'm just saying that with my tyres, mm-hmm. I'm going to have the pace. It was kind of infuriating to hear that. You know, Piastri did super well though. He was overtaking like a boss during the race to get back up to second position. And then, yes, obviously the difference between a virtual safety car is that, which is what we had when Ocon had an issue, is that all the drivers have to slow down to a certain speed. When there's a full safety car, they have to follow the actual safety car that's on the track. And yes, all the cars concertina and they become in a train again. Like they're all close together. Yeah. Whereas rather than being all spread out, slowing down to a certain speed. So the full safety car obviously advantaged Norris, who was right up Piastri. By then, you know, when they did the race restart, and I think there was 12 or 13 laps to go after the safety car ended. And that was enough for Norris to pass. Piastri finished in second place. So Max won. He led from start to finish. Then Norris in the McLaren, then Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. And fourth was Lewis Hamilton in the Ferrari, which was just incredible.
Albon came fifth.
Oh, yes. That was so good. Happy. But for Lewis Hamilton to start in 12th and then end up fourth, could see how happy he was. So, yeah, it was really nice to see. And a great result.
Oh, absolutely, especially when they were so disheartened with where they qualified. The race and the interventions that happened in the race really, really did advantage the Ferrari boys, especially Lewis, because he was actually behind Leclerc, but Leclerc got pitted again, which then gave Lewis the track advantage.
Charles was not happy.
No, I was just about to say, I think Leclerc was really, really angry. You could hear him on the radio.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, Hamilton was obviously very happy, which is amazing. And the Williams boys, Albon and Sainz, came out with 14 points between them. And after that, what I find so exciting is that Albon is now eighth in the driver championship with 40 points. And the next closest to him in ninth is only on 14 points.
Esteban Ocon.
Yeah. And that's a huge difference between the two. And between seventh and eighth, the gap isn't as big. They're quite close. But I think between like fifth and eighth in the driver's championship, there's only a couple of points between them.
So fifth place is Charles Leclerc, who's on 61 points. And then in eighth place is Alex Albon on 40 points. So there's 11 points between fifth and eighth. And then you got Lewis and Hamilton on 53, Kimi Antonelli on 48. It's still a pretty good fight to be had in the drivers' championship. It's still wide open.
All in all, I think it's been really interesting to see this midfield battle playing out, because at the top we've basically got McLaren, Red Bull, Mercedes. I'd probably go McLaren, Mercedes, Red Bull.
McLaren, Max, not Red Bull.
That's why I changed the way it went around, because I was like, wait, no. Red Bull's basically only got one driver at the moment.
And that's really evident in the constructor standings, you know, like they need to, this word that is used all the time for drivers, they need to nurture Yuki, right? And help him reach his maximum potential in that car, which is a bit tricky to drive, and a car that's built around Max, and Max is able to get a handle on it. But, you know, he's doing a terrible job. He's doing a pretty good job, actually.
He finished with the last point this race after completely totaling his car and starting in 20th. I think, you know, in the grand scheme of the most recent partners of Max Verstappen, Yuki is actually doing the best. But yeah, there was someone saying, oh, you know, Yuki's got to be careful because at the moment, Hadjar's doing so well and Red Bull
Hadjar is doing well.
He is. He really is. But I have a feeling Red Bull are not going to jump ship just yet with Yuki. I think they're going to stay put for a little while because they know that Yuki's got he's had the tenure in Formula One, and he obviously has shown a lot of growth from his early Red Bull Light, whatever you call it. My God, why do I keep Racing getting Bulls. Their name wrong?
Red Bull Light. Racing Bulls.
Racing Bulls. I just have brain farts about it all the time.
But Yuki is doing a pretty good job in the Red Bull. He's not doing an awful job. So there's Isaac Hadjar is doing pretty good in the Racing Bulls, which is a car that supposedly is easier to drive, Yuki was also doing really well when he was driving that car. Yeah. So, you know, Liam Lawson, on the other hand, not doing so great and struggling.
About to say, what's Liam Lawson's excuse then? But, you know, that's a bit mean.
He came in guns blazing. He's got to expect a bit of backlash from that. So
exactly. Bit of humble pie. Quite delicious. Yeah, you should try it.
Yeah, I think he's probably getting a bit sick of eating it now. He's been eating it for several weeks. Yeah. I'll just go back and do the bottom 10. So we've got all the results covered. Finishing in 11th was Fernando Alonso, who qualified in 5th. So he wasn't able to score points. Yuki Tsunoda got him in the last few laps to take the last points position. Nico Hülkenberg in 12th in the Kick Sauber. In 13th was Pierre Gasly. Liam Lawson in 14th. Lance Stroll 15th. Franco Colapinto in the Alpine in 16th. Ollie Bearman in the Haas in 17th. And Gabriel Bortoleto 18th, who was plum last in the two DNFs, as we mentioned, Kimi Antonelli and Esteban Ocon.
This week, obviously, we were in Italy, and it would be remiss of me to not say that Diane is Italy. It would be remiss of me to not ask her all the questions about Italy, because she is Italy. So, have you been to Emilia Romagna? Come on, Diane.
Yes. Several times, actually. Yes. And I've been to Bologna, where Kimi Antonelli was born. The first time I went, I did a little mini Italian school course there for a couple of weeks just to bring my Italian kind of a refresher, bring it up to speed. And then, yes, I've been a couple of times. And Modena, I was last in Modena a year and a half ago. And that is about 70 kilometres from Emilia. From Imola, rather. It's about 70 kilometres from Imola. Yes. And Modena is, it's one of my favourite towns in Italy. And I'll tell you why. It's got the world's best restaurant there. Chef Massimo Bottura's restaurant, which won the world's best restaurant on the San Pellegrino Best Restaurant Awards several years running. And then they had to change the rules to say if he won it once, he can't win it again. Because his restaurant is just that good. Emilia Romagna region is food, but it's also Motor Alley. So that's where Ferrari HQ is. So you walk out of Modena train station and you've got the Ferrari Museum right there. And then you can also catch a bus that takes you to the Ferrari factory, Enzo Ferrari's home. It's absolutely incredible. I've been twice. I loved it so much. And they've got like a proper simulator there at the Ferrari factory where you can sort of sit in. Like you're sitting down low, like you're in a Formula One car, and they've got the nose of the F1 car at the start, and you're surrounded by a big curved screen, and an attendant comes in and he straps you in with the harness, like properly straps you in and pulls the harness so you're tight up against the seat. And then you have 7 minutes and you choose your track first, which track, and I was like, Monza, it's got to be Monza. Also too, because Monza's one of the easiest tracks to navigate. It doesn't have that many turns and corners. So I chose Monza. I had 7 minutes to bang it. I think I spent more time in the gravel and in the wall when I did on the track. But I've got to say, it was the best, maybe second best 7 minutes of my life.
Do I dare ask the first best though? Anyway, next, I've been in a simulator before, or like I've done a simulator drive before, and I was exactly the same as you. I just could not keep it on the track. It's not like playing on the PlayStation or something where you can adjust the level of how hard you want it to be and you're like, oh, I'm so good at this. You get into the simulator and it's like, oh.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to get used to and really hard to get used to in like 7 minutes. I think my last lap was the best lap I'd clocked and it was like, oh, his time's up. It's like, can I go again? All I wanted to do was do it again straight away. Like the adrenaline was pumping. It was great. So you've also got the Lamborghini factory there, Ducati factory there, the Pagani factory there, another Italian motor car. So it's really known as Motor Alley. But the other things you should do when you're in Modena or Bologna is you definitely 100% need to go to a balsamic vinegar house.
It's the proper stuff, right? It's not the vinegar that's been flavored.
It's properly made in barrels. Barrels are aerated and they're covered with a little cloth doily to stop the bugs from getting in. And the angels share, or as I say, gets evaporated each year and then they top it up. So they're aged. Their balsamics are aged minimum like 12 years. To learn about how that process is done and made and then do all the tastings is a really awesome experience. The other awesome experiences I've done around food there was to go to a Parmigiano factory where they make Parmesan cheese.
That's my favorite. Oh, now my mouth's watering.
Yeah, and Modena itself is service with a train station, really easy to get to. It's like half an hour by train. From Imola, it's 70 kilometres. I've never actually done that train ride, but it's 70 Ks. So
most people, let's say, fly into Rome from Australia. That just kind of tends to be the biggest hub. How far by train do you reckon it would be?
Yeah, from Rome to Bologna is 2 hours. Bologna to Modena is quite close. It's about 20 minutes, half an hour, depending on the type, because they've got different train types of trains in Italy, of course. You've got your fast trains and your regional trains and whatnot. And a hot tip, if you are traveling to Italy, you can book your train travel. And if you book out your train travel far enough in advance, often business class carriage is only 3, 4, 5 euro more than standard class carriage.
And it's so much better.
It's absolutely worth it. So when you're at the train station, you get a dedicated carriage and a dedicated seat with your ticket. Definitely worth going business class on the trains if you can.
Yeah, yep. I was just in Italy a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And the reason that I was traveling solo, and the reason that I really liked booking the business class was because A, traveling solo, B, it has room behind the seats to actually put your big luggage in, which if you're not in the business class carriages, you don't have that luxury. There's only like one little kind of luggage storage spot. Oh,
there is, but it's just much smaller. And those carriages are much cheaper, of course.
Much fuller. I almost had my luggage stolen off a train coming into Milan Law. We didn't book in advance. There was only the general carriage tickets available. And so we put it back in the luggage compartment. It wasn't like in the luggage hold because there were too many bags, but it was kind of in there. And just so happens, the one time Espen got up to kind of just check my luggage, he saw some guy, and I've got bright yellow luggage, like it is.
Yes, I know
yellow,
your luggage.
Yellow. Yeah. So you can't miss it. He grabbed my yellow case and was walking down the steps from the train. And Ethan was like, whoa. And so he had to run and pull this bag off this guy. So if ever there is a story to make sure you can get business class, it is that. Obviously, talking about Emilia-Romagna being such a foodie capital, this week was a perfect week to cook food from Emilia-Romagna. Guess who didn't?
You didn't.
No, I got back from my road trip.
Friday. Yeah, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. I mean, what are you thinking? Like, Dominique, where's your commitment to the cause?
I didn't have all day Saturday and Sunday because...
I'm joking.
Saturday was a public holiday here in Norway. It was Norwegian, it was the 17th of May, which is the Norwegian Constitution Day. So no stores were open. We were out celebrating. It was very Norwegian themed. And no stores are open on Sundays in Norway either.
Some of the great dishes of the Emilia-Romagna region
that I should have cooked.
Everybody's heard of spaghetti bolognese. Doesn't exist. Spaghetti bolognese is a fallacy. It does not exist. Get it out of your head.
I never ate spaghetti bolognese ever at my grandparents' house, at my nonna-in-law. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. That's an American thing.
Exactly. And now Australia's adopted it. So there is a ragu that's made with pork and veal mince, a little bit of mince, not packed. There's no such thing as spaghetti and meatballs either. But there's a ragu and it's usually served with tagliatelle, so or fettuccine. Mm-hmm. Lasagna is from that region. Lasagna there is beautiful.
And again, not absolutely loaded with meat. There is some meat, but not absolutely loaded, right? It's quite sparsely populated.
So they're two of the very famous dishes from there. Tortellini in brodo. So good. And then the cheeses, as we've talked about, the Parmigiano, but they also make a bunch of other cheeses as well. It's not the only one. Parma, like prosciutto, comes from that region as well. One of my most memorable dishes that I ate when I was in Modena was on one of my early trips there. It was a ravioli, but cooked in balsamic. And it was honestly one of the best things I've ever eaten. And it was just something that stuck in my memory. And I went back to that same restaurant 6 years later and it wasn't on the menu. So it was,
Disappointing.
So next week we're heading to Monaco, which is the pinnacle of the motorsport calendar anywhere in the world, in every single code of motorsport, the Monaco Formula One Grand Prix, which is a notorious circuit for not being able to overtake because it is a street mm-hmm. circuit and the roads are mm-hmm. very narrow.
When I was in Monaco, April, my gosh, why can't I think of the date? It was just in April. They were already setting up and it is unbelievable how close those barriers are to the buildings. Yeah. There's like not even a meter from the barrier to the front door of Gucci, of Louis Vuitton. It's like, oh my God, that is ridiculously close. But anyway, Monaco.
Yes, Monaco. This is the second of a triple header. So mm-hmm. we've got Yay. Spain in a week later. But who are your predictions, Monique, for Monaco?
Look, I am going to be fairly predictable in this and say, I think I had the same kind of thought this week. I'm going to say it would be Piastri, Verstappen, and I'm going to put Russell in there just because I want to see Russell. I think he's got bursts of pace, but I still think it's going to be like this week where Piastri just pips Verstappen at the post. That's my prediction. That's quali. Sorry, that was my quali prediction.
My quali prediction, I'm going to say Oscar, Max, Leclerc.
Oh, very nice. For race, I reckon I'm going to swap Russell out for Norris. So I'm going to have Piastri, Verstappen, Norris.
I'm going to have Piastri, Verstappen, Hamilton.
Ooh, controversial. Again.
Yeah.
Again, Hamilton beating Leclerc.
Mm-hmm. I think the Ferraris are firing up. That's my hope anyway.
Yeah. And I think, it's a hard track to overtake, but things happen in the pit lane, undercuts, overcuts. And I feel like that's where it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And obviously, you never know what happens. Someone could hit the barriers and we have a safety car.
Exactly.
We just had some DNFs because of mechanical failures. Maybe that'll happen again. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear your race predictions as well. So drop us a comment on Facebook or Instagram or one of the social media handles or send us an email. And we would love to hear who you think is going to come 1, 2, 3 in quali and in the race in Monaco.
Yes, we love having chats about that. I have a lot of people message me on my personal Instagram wanting to chat about that because they've realized that we're actually into Formula One. But by all means, we're available to talk to on all our other social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube. You can email us at andawaywego.f1podcasts@gmail.com. You can probably don't give us a call because we won't answer that if you give us a call. I don't like answering my phone on a good day. If I don't know your number, I'm not going to answer it. But email us, message us. You can talk, you can talk to us about anything. If you like what we're talking about, chat to us about that. Or, you can leave us a nice rating too. That goes well on your favorite podcast listening app.
Yeah, we're everywhere. We're on all the podcast listening apps and we love it when we get reviews and ratings. It really does help this little podcast that we're hoping to build into a bigger podcast. It really helps us move along. So thank you in advance. Thank you, Monique. Great to chat to you. Great to see you at home. And thank you everyone for listening. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato.
Let's do it.